Captain, which is enforcement program update and a briefing. So Captain and Chief.
Good afternoon, Director, Deputy Director, Commissioners. For the record, I'm Chris Anderson from the enforcement program. And we are here today to continue with our statewide presentations to you in an effort to provide you with an idea of the various challenges that we face in each of the regions. These presentations are designed to highlight some of our successes and how our program strategic objectives support the agency's goals and mission. So presenting today will be Captain Wickersham. I've known Jeff for a long time. He is a longtime sergeant here in Region 5, has lots of experience on especially the Upper River and some of the complex issues, tribal issues that we deal with there. Jeff just recently promoted to captain a few months ago. Very happy that have him on board as part of the command staff. And your turn.
Thank you, Chief. First off, for everybody here, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Director Unsworth and Deputy Director Storr, thank you for this opportunity to give you a rundown on Region 5 today. This is my first opportunity to address the Commission in a formal status like this, so if I make a mistake, please give me a nod or something.
I told you guys last time, you got the guns. We should be worried about
you. Okay. Moving right on. So, as the Chief said, I'm new. I'm the new enforcement captain here in the region. One of the issues I have right at the current moment is the fact that I don't have any sergeants except for my brand new sergeant standing in the back here, Brad Roden. He is now supervising Lewis and Cowlitz counties. He's the only sergeant we have in the region, and we should have three. So there's some personnel complications right now, and we're working through those, but it seems to be going okay right now. Demographics for the region. And the enforcement responsibility for Region 5 lays in Clark, Cowlitz, Klickitat, Lewis, and Skamania counties. The way that the enforcement program is broken up right now, Region 6 has responsibility for Wakayakum County, even though under the agency maps, Wakayakum County falls under Region 5. So that requires just a little bit of communication with the Region 6 officers, sergeants, and captain to make sure needs are being met. We have three sergeants, or we should. I previously filled the sergeant's position for Clark, Skamania, and Klickitat counties. We've now broken that up. We're going to split up the responsibilities to address some responsibilities and needs that were hard to address due to competing interests. So we're currently looking at hiring two additional sergeants for the region, which will bring us back up to three, which is historically where we have been. We have 14 officers. We're fully filled right now in terms of our officers. Two are currently in field training or in-house academy. We are the only region that has both eastern and western Washington habitats and species. This comes back to those competing interests. For a single sergeant managing both the east and west side, I always found myself trying to compete with land issues in Klickitat County, where we have so many agency lands. And then at the same time competing with ESA, fisheries issues, hunting seasons, and everything else on the west side. Where do I put my time? So the result for this is a challenging enforcement landscape. What I'd like to talk about today that I believe are the priorities for this region come down to fisheries enforcement, both above Bonneville Dam and below, with all of our different issues. Catch accounting, habitat protection, public lands enforcement, and with our recent acquisitions in Klickitat County, this becomes even more of an issue and priority. Curtailing wildlife trafficking, I'll get into that. Ensuring public safety in the outdoors. Most of the region is rural, and we find ourselves being that first entity on scene sometimes. It's very important that we have good relationships with our other partners. And finally, big game seasons, because we have a lot of elk here and a lot of deer. Region 5 officers aren't afraid of a challenge. If we find a problem, we try to deal with it. We've got Mr. Muscle Man here. All kidding aside, the challenges that are posed in this region are daunting. We have, since the merger of the agencies, our staff within enforcement has gone down in the area. But yet our roles and responsibilities with endangered species concerns, habitat protection, our management concerns working with the tribes, our NGO partners, trying to make this all fit under one roof is very complicated. But we're up for the challenge. The first thing here I'd like to talk about is fisheries enforcement. Region 5, obviously, aside from the mouth of the Columbia, is the gateway for fish returning to hatcheries and spawning grounds on the Columbia River and all of its associated tributaries. For any fish that are returning to the upper Columbia, the Snake River, they have to make it through this area, and we need to make sure we are providing effective and meaningful enforcement to protect those fish. ESA-listed species are present during most fisheries in the Columbia or its tributaries. We're always looking for these things. We're always making sure people are not harvesting them. Effective enforcement presence is vital to ensure sustainable and orderly fisheries during both recreational and commercial seasons. Inconsistent regulations complicate our effective enforcement opportunities. And what do I mean by that? There are certain rules that maybe the state of Washington has, and the state of Oregon is slightly different. When we look at our jurisdiction across the state line on the Columbia with the compact, we have to think about, okay, how are we going to enforce this rule if we have an Oregon fisherman versus a Washington fisherman? What port did they launch out of? What is their licensing? Having regulations that are somewhat different make that much more complicated to deal with. We can get there, but sometimes we have to think creatively. I'm not sure if you've heard of this idea before, but we're striving to provide gravel-to-gravel protection. And that describes a kind of an idea for patrol where we're protecting the spawning grounds, the resulting smolt and juvenile fish moving to the marine areas, harvest and reporting in the primary harvest areas, and finally the protection of those fish as they return back to the tributaries. This is not just a regional issue. We need to be working with the other regional managers. We need to be working with our captains, our sergeants, other jurisdictions on the river to make sure that we're not duplicating effort, that we are ensuring that the patrol measures that we're taking in Region 5 are being appropriately addressed upstream so that those fish we're protecting here are not being forgotten upstream or on their downstream migration. That's critical to making this concept work. And we've been putting this to practice, our communications much better with our other agencies, with the other patrol jurisdictions, intertribe, the four Columbia River Treaty tribes upstream, as well as Oregon State Police, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and even recently working a little bit with Idaho Fish and Game and their enforcement officers to bring them up to speed on what we're doing. Some pictures here of some different issues we've run into. Random patrol schedules, visible presence, and enforceable rules and regulations go hand in hand with making our patrol efforts effective and deterring bad behavior. I have directed all the regional officers under my control and even worked with the sergeants and captains outside of the region to make sure that we're actively working our hotspots as well as the hard-to-reach locations to ensure that we're making our enforcement dollar stretch as far as we can get it there. This is possible only with adequate staffing. There are some areas that are just so far when we're protecting these fish that it takes so long just to get there at the beginning of a patrol day. Either we work extremely long hours, or if something happens, we have to turn and go the other way. If we get a hot call and we were planning on patrolling an area and an emergent issue arises, we have to abandon the patrol and go there. These are all competing interests that make the job that much harder. With more staffing, it's much easier to make sure we have that presence. But again, we're squeezing every last enforcement dollar we can to make sure we have that presence. Fishermen fish when it makes sense to fish. And so the enforcement officers must shift their schedules to work both the daytime and the nighttime fisheries. We need to flex to meet those needs. If there's a large rainstorm and there's nobody out there, sometimes it's good to have presence, but maybe we need to adjust our patrol schedules to make sure that we're there when the fishermen are there. Technology is a critical piece of this patrol strategy. Recent improvements with our records management system, additional technology, FLIR systems on our boats, it makes our patrol efforts much more reliable, much easier to navigate, and much easier to find possible violations when we're in the field. And this comes from the dollars that you graciously give us in the enforcement program to do our jobs. Catch accounting. Problems with this particular issue have arisen due to blurry lines of jurisdiction, case law, and a system that is porous. results, and this results in unlawful trafficking. Sometimes it manifests itself in ways that we don't immediately understand. Due to complexity, it's difficult for some jurisdictions to bring successful prosecutions. You have a large case that spans state lines and sometimes even bordering on international lines, and you're looking at a buyer that kind of did things wrong, but it comes down to the initial receiver that made the problem. We found that our prosecutors are often wary of following through on a prosecution because they're looking for the initial bad actor. They don't want to just take the low-hanging fruit. And so that's complicated some of our prosecutions and investigations. Some buyers have been found with years' worth of unsubmitted fish-receiving tickets. I won't get into all the details, but the state of Washington, the state of Oregon, the four treaty tribes, CRTFIC, we all have somewhat different rules about fish-receiving tickets. And it blurs the lines of where we need to be. Some buyers are operating at sites where the state lacks jurisdiction. And this is true upstream of Bonneville Dam, where we have sites that are known as in-lieu fishing sites or treaty fishing access sites. One particular case that was investigated revealed over 1 million pounds of unreported catch between 2009 and 2011, and not one fish-receiving ticket was submitted. We did find fish-receiving tickets later that had not been submitted, and they were eventually entered into the system, but there was still a large amount of fish tickets that were never created. Also important with this was that in this time frame, we had the quick reporting scheme going on, and most of these fish were not quick reported, which is our main basis for in-season. I could assign all my officers to work this one issue, and we could not curtail the problem. There is no simple solution to this problem. My staff are engaged with harvest and buyer checks in the field and work with our local counterparts, both state and tribal, but we lack the ability to enforce state law at certain locations. And where there are no rules about it, we have no enforcement authority. And that picture right there is what was considered a fish ticket. Habitat protection. Field enforcement of fish and wildlife rules during times of harvest means little if the habitat those species depend on is not protected when they finally make it there. Habitat protection is an integral piece of our gravel-to-gravel protection strategy that I mentioned earlier. Many of the reported habitat violations that we do occur come from neighbors. They come from outdoor users and local WDFW county and municipal staff. Finding an actual violation in progress by an officer when it's occurring is very rare. We rely on those reports from our from good citizens, good Samaritans in the field, our staff, to make sure that notification is timely when they're finding this information. Connecting the importance of habitat protection and the impacts to species conservation is vital, and in particular for prosecution. We find that our habitat cases are very hard to get in front of a judge, let alone a jury, because they're complicated. We have to prove, was there a take? What was the damage? What was the damage to the resource? We work hand in hand with our habitat biologist, our habitat regional manager, and staff with Forest Service, staff with DNR, being the FPAs now are used instead of our HPAs in certain circumstances. We need to make sure we check all the boxes. And so getting through all these habitat protection issues can be a challenge. However, with endangered species concerns, state lands concerns, making sure we're protecting our public lands, it is obviously vital. Public lands enforcement. Region 5 has a lot. There's 5 wildlife areas and numerous boat ramps, campgrounds, and access sites, which are situated within the vast area of Region 5 and are heavily used. And they're sometimes abused. Klickitat County in particular, we have the Klickitat Wildlife Area. We have separate lands elsewhere in the county. Clark County has the Shilapoo Wildlife Area, Vancouver Lake, and then we have Cowlitz Wildlife Area, Mount St. Helens. We just have a lot. There's a lot of different areas to patrol. They're all important. We also have all of the DNR lands. We do have DNR officers, but we find ourselves there quite often with hunting seasons, with general patrol. We find that our attention is taken there quite a bit. While managed by a different agency, they are nonetheless state lands, and they are nonetheless important. Aside from the state lands, lots of federal land. We occupy a role in the protection of all the lands and routinely interact with our federal and state partners to get the most out of the educational efforts that we undertake there, as well as the enforcement efforts, contacts, and oftentimes citations that come along with those. Jurisdiction is always interesting, particularly on Forest Service lands. Forest Service is facing the same shortfalls in staff that we have, except on a much larger scale. Currently, in the Gifford-Pinchot National Forest, there's only two Forest Service officers to occupy that entire area. And one of them lives in Oregon, south of Hood River, and the other one lives in Battleground. So most of the Forest Service ground that's in Lewis County, they don't see an officer very often. So we help provide that stopgap, that additional presence in those areas. And we're glad to do it because our stakeholders, our license holders, our hunters, fishermen, outdoorsmen, they're all using that land. And so we can be there too and occupy that role. Another priority is curtailing wildlife trafficking. Limited harvest opportunity and lucrative black markets make some of Washington's fish and wildlife species prime targets for thieves. Some different examples I'll talk about here. We have organized salmon snagging groups that are caught during closed hours on the North Fork of the Lewis River, often just for row. They're stripping the row and they're throwing the fish. These people are coming out of Portland, coming out of the large metro areas. They have no licenses. They're there at night. I wanted to play some video, but I felt it would have been a little difficult with, I didn't know what my technology was going to be today. But all this is at night. So again, technology is important. Night vision, FLIR. We have other technology to make sure that we can detect if stuff is going on when we're not there. It's all important. Black market sale of oversized sturgeon and undersized. And then there's also a subject that we recently had that was shooting deer in Klickitat County for use as bait, and then he was harvesting eagles over that bait. He was caught twice, and he finally paid the price for his actions. Trafficking of illegal catch from one area that is closed to an area that is open has been common, in particular upstream of Bonneville Dam. Law enforcement brought this to the attention of managers, and they have changed season structure, and this has helped the problem tremendously. We've seen most of these problems go away. That season structure change corrected some of it, but still there's some inconsistent regulations that provide loopholes for unlawful activity to continue, in particular with sturgeon that are just flat out unlawful to possess in any time or form, such as oversized fish. The behavior of some individuals is so brazen that they almost catch themselves. Networking with other enforcement entities is important so officers know about local violators and violations, hot topics, and who is the primary point of contact for investigations. If we have an investigation or problems that we're investigating, oftentimes there's another agency that's looking at these in parallel. And without that communication and knowing who that point of contact is, we often are investigating the same issue, and we don't know about it. In the particular case of the eagle you see there, those eagles, this was a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service case, and we caught this individual red-handed with two hot eagles in the back of his car. If we had not networked with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on this case, probably would have got a minor conviction in district court, but this subject is now a convicted felon because he did this multiple times. I believe we had over 30 deer that we found that this one subject had shot and left to waste so that he could bait eagles and shoot them and take their feathers. That was a big win for us. And since this case ended, we don't really see roadkill or shot deer on the Lytle grade on the Klickitat Wildlife Area anymore. And I believe for a long time it was this one individual. So that was a win. We'll take that. Without coordination like this, multiple entities would be working parallel investigations and missing vital information, and we would be missing the opportunity to curtail the theft of wildlife, the theft of state resources, and the opportunity of our hunters and fishermen and outdoorsmen alike. Ensuring public safety in the outdoors is one of the big ones for us. As fish and wildlife officers, we are general authority law enforcement officers. We have the same commission cards as our county, city, and state counterparts. Dwindling budgets have forced many agencies, in particular counties, to cut back on staffing, and the first locations of coverage to be cut are in the remote areas. Clark County recently has gone through a staffing shortage, and their marine program for marine safety has been cut. We used to work with them routinely on the river, and now they only will respond if there's a call. There's very little law enforcement presence on the Columbia River. Likewise, in the National Forest, in the remote areas, unless there's a call, you're typically not going to see a deputy or an officer running around those areas, unless it's State Fish and Wildlife or DNR. WDFW police officers work closely with our law enforcement partners and often provide first response capabilities when a call occurs in these remote areas. One of the big ones is search and rescue. Skamania County has lost a number of deputies, and we've worked closely with that agency to step in and help them with their emergent search and rescue issues when calls come out. But I think that's true for many of our counties. The working relationships with these local sheriff's offices to include training and interaction with field staff have greatly improved in the last 5 years. Having the ability to communicate with these agencies, as well as their ability to communicate with our staff, ensure appropriate and timely response to in-progress issues, as well as just communication of, hey, what's going on in the area. Big game season's one of my favorite. Elk hunting is a major draw in Region 5. I don't think there's many sportsmen that don't enjoy this in the local area, at least that's my belief. Well-known hunting areas attract families spanning generations, as well as first-time users. With the high numbers of people concentrated in specific areas, violations typically occur. With the private forest lands going to permit systems, we've definitely seen an increase in the number of people on Forest Service and DNR lands, and a commensurate increase in the violations that we're detecting there. Private property and subsequent hunting while trespassing calls are all too common nowadays. Upgrades to our communication systems have made reporting violations much easier and allows for a faster response by Fish and Wildlife officers. I guess a shout out to our cell phone companies. They've been putting a lot of towers up recently so people can watch YouTube or do stuff up in the mountains. And it's made it a lot easier for us to get real-time reporting, even people taking videos of what they're seeing in the field. This greatly helps enforcement in our response, as well as prosecution, charging and prosecution of these individuals. Once again, technology can hurt us sometimes, but it often helps us as well. From Mount St. Helens to check stations on DNR and our agency lands, we try to hit the spots where the people are, and it's a great job. But we also find the violations close season. With big game season, sometimes one deer just isn't enough, and they've got to have more. That private property sign, to one person it means stay off, to the other person it's just a challenge of how can I get around that trespassing sign to get myself a deer. These are all problems that we have to overcome within our program to effectively enforce. Anyway, there's a lot of different issues within Region 5 we could spend time with. I could probably ramble on here for hours about this, but those are the primary issues, and I'd like to thank you for your time listening today and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Captain. It's the issues are there, and I think we all feel confident with you, and congratulations on your promotion, being out there taking care of all of those issues.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, nice presentation.
Thank you.
I noticed, however, there's a gentleman in the audience who has a remarkable resemblance to you.
Resemblance.
Where do you go?
Hello, Ed.
That individual? Yes, my dad.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks for the presentation. When you mentioned this eagle, the illegal taking of the eagle,
yes.
And you mentioned that he was a convicted felon now. What was the fine and sentencing that resulted from this arrest?
He had I don't know the numbers right off the top, but there was a monetary fine. This was prosecuted and charged in U.S. District Court out of Yakima, I believe, so he's in the District of Washington. I believe the fine was in the thousands of dollars, and he did, I believe, time in jail or in the federal system as well as in-home confinement, but I'm not 100% on what that time frame was.
I know oftentimes we have challenges for judges to try to equate what's a reasonable sentence or a fine for a Fish and Wildlife violation compared to what they're usually used to dealing with. And, I think in many cases people feel they should be a little bit more severe than it has been the practice. But I don't know if that's improving or not. But I'm always curious about that. Also, on this matter of catch accounting, that is a serious matter that's gotten my attention. Is there a list of qualified or licensed buyers of salmon, for example, and on the Lower River, or that you are, that are subject to audit, or, you know, how do we get a better handle on this?
Well, so this particular violation, I want to make sure it's clear, this occurred upstream of Bonneville Dam.
Uh-huh.
And there, we obviously have our list of licensed buyers, both out of Oregon and Washington, that are available to law enforcement. But the problem is that in certain areas, the harvesters are able to sell with ambiguity. They're able to move this product to different areas that are that's hard for us to detect when this is going on.
Right.
And it just creates that problem of being able to properly account and measure what that looks like.
I'd sure like to hear some suggestions on how to correct that, because I think this is a major threat to conservation.
At a later time, I can put something together and present that if you'd like.
Terrific.
From the enforcement perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain Wickersham, if I recall correctly, maybe you can help me here. You were chief on this incident you're talking about with a million pounds of fish that happened in 2009 to 2012?
That's correct.
Was this part of the sting operation where the Corliss went up the river and was the base station for this effort?
The Corliss is brought up the river to help complement some patrol operations we had going at the time. The problem with this, or the discovery of this case, of this investigation, and the documents that related to it were part of actually a sturgeon investigation that Region 5 had undertaken at that time. And the two, while enforcing a similar area, didn't have much to do with one another.
Well, we were involved in some discussion about that on the Fish Committee back in that period of time. And I, as I recall, and it may not be totally accurate, that this case was turned over to the feds for prosecution.
That's correct.
And it just died a natural death? Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Do we have any idea on how many sturgeon we're losing to poaching in the Lower Columbia, or in the Columbia River?
In terms of the lower versus the upper above the dams?
Both.
Both? No, not anything good. We've had some instances where we've caught people recently with close season sturgeon in the lower river. All of it seems kind of chance encounters, people just taking that opportunity. They catch a sturgeon, they tie it up to a stringer, and it leaves with them at the end of the day. We haven't found anything within Region 5 anyway that would suggest a larger scheme. I would imagine that there is something underlying that we haven't detected yet, just given the geographic expanse of the area. Above Bonneville Dam and in the upper river, I believe there are definitely a lot of fish that are being moved, trafficked. There's investigations underway right now that would lend additional evidence to that. But to quantify and put a number on it, I couldn't put a number on it, not without some additional data.
Thank you.
Really nice job, Jeff.
Thank you.
You mentioned quick reporting as not being successful in this catch-a-can case. Could you elaborate a little bit on what that requires, and also on the subject of electronic fish tickets and our efforts to look at that idea?
Okay. I'll break them out into two separate issues. The quick reporting scheme, and I saw Ron Roller was in the room, so hopefully he can help me if I get off track here a little bit. So quick reporting is a scheme for in-season management, obviously, that's tied back to fish tickets. Once fish tickets have been submitted and they've made it through the system, you should be able to tie the number from the quick report to the number on the fish ticket, and they should match, or they should be extremely close. Now, the problems with quick reporting above Bonneville Dam are much different than below Bonneville. We obviously have the enforcement tools, the regulations to make sure that everybody is performing that, our buyers and our fishermen that are sailing directly off their boats. We don't find too many problems with that. We find some small problems here and there. Above Bonneville Dam, with those sites that I mentioned earlier, where we have no jurisdiction, there's buyers that are the first receivers of fish. A first receiver is the original receiver is responsible for creating that quick report. They originally received those fish from the fishermen. The problem is we have most of the fishermen that are selling to these unlicensed individuals. Those individuals are now selling to larger corporations that are multi-state, sometimes multinational. No fish tickets are being created. So we have a problem of no quick reporting is being conducted. And then we also have no fish tickets. In several instances where we have a buyer on one of these sites that is working with the state and creating a quick report, so to speak, and giving it to our staff, we've sometimes received documents from buyers that come in later down the road. An incident happened in 2012 where we had been receiving information from a buyer upstream above the Dalles Dam, and we received the quick reporting information, and we later, a month or two later, we received some import fish tickets that came from the eventual resting place of these fish where they were processed. Upon comparison of that data, we are almost 60% off in terms of underreporting of those fish. And it begins to account for a lot. So without the ability to have jurisdiction, there's not a lot that we can do except work through the system that we have, i.e. USV Oregon, the TAC, the Compact, to see what we can do about getting buyers, getting individuals to properly report the fish, and stress the importance of that in terms of the impacts that we have to keep our fisheries open, because it doesn't only affect them, it affects the recreational fisheries as well, both above and below Bonneville Dam.
When you mentioned jurisdiction, is that Washington, Oregon, tribal, non-tribal?
On the treaty fishing access sites and in-lieu sites above Bonneville Dam, the state lacks jurisdiction for anything against any federally recognized tribal members on those sites.
Okay.
So if that person is a buyer, I don't have the ability to enforce our catch accounting rules on that individual because of their tribal affiliation on that site. Now, however, if a non-tribal person is on those sites and they're buying, I do have authority over that individual. That creates problems for us, because if I go on to one of those sites or ask one of my officers to go there and we get into an interaction with a federally recognized tribal member, we all of a sudden are in a quandary where what authority do we have if they start causing a problem or if they tell us to leave? Where does that lie? It definitely makes us uneasy when we're there.
Sure.
And the electronic?
Oh, thank you for reminding me. Obviously, the ground fish, we're working with electronic fish receiving tickets in the ground fish fishery. I haven't been following it that closely, but Deputy Chief Sensi has asked me, as well as the chief, to look at how we can implement a strategy like that, maybe work with this area to test out a scheme like that. Again, because of the jurisdictional issues and trying to get everybody on board, we've got to get to that point of getting everybody to agree that fish tickets are a good idea to account for our catch. But in terms of the quick data retrieval and information that would give us, obviously it's something that I would highly support when we get there. And it makes it much easier for us to do our jobs instead of trying to track a fish ticket down that's not required to be submitted until days later. There's rules, everybody has a device, and it would be right there. It would greatly enhance our ability to do our jobs within enforcement.
And finally, do you is it your judgment that the catch accounting problems that you've uncovered constitute a conservation concern?
Personally?
Yes.
I don't know. I've spoken with biologists both within our agency and at the federal level, and it's caused concern, but I don't think I have the statistical background or mathematics or resource expertise to make that decision or assumption.
Anything else?
Thank you very much for the presentation. It was great, and I just wanted to remind the commission and the people in the audience, and all of our Wild Future meetings, public hearings, every single one of them, people talked about increasing our enforcement presence and how much they enjoyed meeting officers in the field. I want to confirm that. I recreate down in this region a lot, and I don't know what kind of sample I am, but I've been checked 4 or 5 times while I've been out hunting and fishing.
That begs the question.
I'm thinking. I'm wondering. I'm like the slow deer or something. I'm easy to catch. But anyway, it's always been positive. Most nowadays, now everybody kind of knows me. But at first they didn't, and I kind of keep quiet for a while just because it was fun. And to a person, your officers have been helpful and professional, and I just really enjoyed my contacts. And I think that I hear that from a lot of people, that it's a real positive for sportsmen to run into officers in the field. And I just want to say I appreciate that. And I also know you guys are out there and working. And I hear once in a while people tell me that they've been hunting 20 years and never checked an officer. And I just don't buy it. So good job. Thank you.
Thank you, Director.
Thank you.
I think Director speaks for all of us. And yeah. Well done, gentlemen. And I've had the pleasure, as many of us have, of being with some of you guys in the field. And I echo the Director's comments. Extreme professionalism and respect. So hats off.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that's